Om Agyana Simirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Translation: the great king Bharat, while sitting on the bank of the river, saw the small deer, bereft of its mother, floating down the river. Seeing this, he felt great compassion. Like a sincere friend, he lifted the infant deer from the waves, and knowing it to be motherless, brought it to his ashram. Oops. Purport: the laws of nature work in subtle ways unknown to us. Maharaj Bharat was a great king, very advanced in devotional service. He had almost reached the point of loving service to the Supreme Lord, but even from that platform, he could fall down onto the material platform. In Bhagavad Gita, we are therefore warned: yang hina vyatantyete purushang purusharshabha samadukha sukhang dhirang somritatvaya kalpate. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation. Spiritual salvation and liberation from material bondage must be worked out with great caution, otherwise a little discrepancy will cause one to fall down again into material existence. By studying the activities of Maharaj Bharata, we can learn the art of becoming completely freed from all material attachment. As it will be revealed in later verses, Bharat Maharaj had to accept the body of a deer due to being overly compassionate for this infant deer. We should be compassionate by raising one from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Otherwise, at any moment, our spiritual advancement may be spoiled and we may fall down onto the material platform. Maharaj Bharat's compassion for the deer was the beginning of his fall down into the material world. Bharat Maharaj was a great devotee after whom this land, Bharata, is named. He was young when he left home for the sake of spiritual realization. He was living in the forest alone, worshipping Krishna. When, one day, as he was meditating on the bank of a river, a lion roared close by and a pregnant doe who had come for drinking water at the river, being terrified, jumped over the river in midair. The child, the fawn, or pre-fawn, within her womb, fell out, and the mother went to the other side of the river and went into a cave and fell down dead from exhaustion and distress. And the baby deer, it's called a fawn, floated down the river, and Bharat Maharaj saw the fawn coming, understanding the fawn to be motherless. He plucked, motherless and helpless, he plucked the newly born deer from the river, which was to be the cause of his fall down, because he became overly attached to the deer, to the extent that he forgot the very reason that he'd come to the forest, to worship Krishna. As a result, in his next life, he became a deer, And in the life after that, he was again born as a human. And in this life, in that third life from the present one being described, he achieved perfection without becoming attached to anything in this material world. So, affection for the deer was the cause of fall down for Bharat Maharaj. But it's not inherent, it's not surprising or inherently wrong that Bharat saved that deer. As he himself said, I just read text 7 of this chapter. Now I'll read text 10. Bharat Maharaj reasoned to himself, even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered. So he reasoned like this, that actually the reasoning is not wrong, but he took it too far. That one may neglect his own personal interests, even though they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered. That doesn't mean that you give up your devotional service. That's taking it too far. But it's not surprising. Just like some time ago we had a Shravan Kirtan camp on the bank of the Narmada, and someone asked me a question. If we're chanting japa and we see someone drowning in the river, should we go to help them? And what did I reply? Just go drown yourself in the river right now for asking such a stupid question. Of course you help them. Well, I can't help them, I'm chanting my rounds. It's ridiculous. But that doesn't mean that you join the, the fire brigade. They rescue people, right, from burning houses and whatever. That I'm going to go join the fire brigade and to hell with my japa because I have to help people. That's either way, giving up your Krishna consciousness to become a fireman, or on some unusual occasion, if you're chanting your japa, there's some emergency situation, and to not address the emergency, either outlook is imbalanced. So Bharat, he saved the deer, and he naturally felt affection toward the deer. Maybe if he'd been a Mayavadi, he wouldn't. He would have just let the deer float down the stream. But a devotee, his detachment is not some kind of stone-hearted withdrawal from the world. Of course, practically Mayavadis would do, it's not against their philosophy to help those who are suffering on the bodily platform. And they take it too far also. They get involved in all kinds of mundane welfare work. So a devotee is not stone-hearted, but the natural affection of the soul is for Krishna, which expands to others. One can actually love others if one loves Krishna. But there may be some natural affection or attraction also. Just like a deer, they are very timid animals, so people tend to like deer. I remember I was once at Gita Nagari, that farm that Srila Prabhupada, one of the farms Srila Prabhupada established in America. And some of the deer living in the forest, they come and you can feed them prasad, they'll come and take it right out of your hand. Which is quite surprising for deer because they're such timid animals. That one kind of deer is that in Hindi they're called Neel Gai, blue cow. I don't know why they're called blue cows, because they're deer, but they're very, very shy. If they see you from a long distance, they'll run away. Even if you had a gun, they'd be too far to shoot, but still, they're very, very shy. But some come close, affectionate, like that. So they're naturally, people feel more inclined to be affectionate toward deer as compared to, for instance, goats. Because, you know, goats are kind of ugly looking and they're not such affectionate animals. So a natural affection is there within this material world. Once in Mauritius, one man challenged Srila Prabhupada, saying that wasn't Arjuna ridiculous? He said, the man explained that Krishna had explained Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, but still, when Arjuna's son Abhimanyu was killed in the battle just a few days later, Arjuna became so upset that having heard that it was Jayadratha who had been instrumental in the death of Abhimanyu, then Arjuna vowed that before the next sunset, if I don't kill Jayadratha, I'll enter fire and kill myself. So the man challenged that, how isn't it ridiculous that Arjuna, he had all this affection for his son to that extent. And Prabhupada replied that no, that is natural to be affectionate toward family members. Of course, Abhimanyu was also a great devotee of Krishna. That's also a factor. But Srila Prabhupada said that it's natural to be affectionate toward family members. It's not that because you become a devotee that you become so stone-hearted or cold. Srila Prabhupada himself, even after taking sannyas, he took an interest in his family members, not inordinately so, but he was always trying to get his son Vrindavan involved in some business. He tried to get Vrindavan involved in selling Prabhupada's books so that he could make some money for his family. He was willing to give Vrindavan Day the whole Calcutta, West Bengal area to be the sole agent for distributing his books. Even that meant his own disciples wouldn't have the right to do so in that area. Srila Prabhupada said that, hey, even after taking sannyas, I sometimes think of my wife. Of course, sannyas, he's not supposed to think of his wife, but after living so many years with someone, it's natural that they come in your mind from time to time. So it's natural that any place that we or stay in for a long time, or any people we interact with for a long time, we feel some attachment to them. I mean, even Calcutta, people in Calcutta, they feel very proud of Calcutta. I myself, after living there for some time, it's just each day just to survive there is an achievement. So, you know, sorry. You may have some attachment for Calcutta also. So after some time, you feel some, yeah, Calcutta, you feel some attachment to it. I remember many years ago I heard a story of Jayapataka Maharaj told of, I think it was the first great flood in Mayapur. That was about 1979. And there's one story of one man, he'd got into a tree above the water level, and he was there for several days before he was rescued. And just on another branch of the tree was a cobra, also taking shelter of the tree. So the cobra could have bitten him any time, but he didn't. And the cobra was his only companion for 4 or 5 days while he was starving and wondering if the water level would rise and drown him. So he was the only companion for 4 or 5 days, and then a boat came and saved him. And as he was leaving, he was thinking, well, you know, I've been with this cobra for 5 days, and we shared this difficulty together. So he just patted the cobra, and the cobra bit him, and he died. So for 5 days, the cobra was just looking at him. But then he died. I guess his family members, if he ever... they weren't so amused as you are, but anyway, he died. So, myself also, if I examine my own psychological state, which I'm generally not much into too much psychology, especially the non-Bhagavad Gita kind, but just like if I hear news of ISKCON in Ireland, I take more interest than if I hear news of ISKCON in, for instance, Estonia. Maybe you've never even heard of Estonia, probably. It's a country of about the same population, I guess, as Ireland, and which is probably less than that of Salem District. You know, it's, you know, in Europe they have all these little countries that if you're driving through them and you fall asleep for 10 minutes, then you'll go right through them without even knowing that you were in them. Serbia's a little bigger. Because I spent time in Ireland, I have an Irish passport as well as a British one, if anyone's interested. And both before joining the movement and after joining the movement, I spent time in Ireland. And generally, I like the people, even though, you know, drunkards and meat eaters and all that kind of thing. But they're generally nice enough people to get along with. At least I find them so. So why is that? I mean, the Estonians are as much jivas as are the Irish, and we're supposed to be. Samaduka sukha. Well, it's a different, but samam pashyati yojuna. This we have this repeated theme in Bhagavad Gita that one should be equal in all circumstances, equal to all kinds of people. Well, you may say it's some kind of natural feeling, and we're not trying to become feelingless in Krishna consciousness. We're trying to become feeling full, but feeling for Krishna, not for anything of this material world. But within this material world, even as devotees, we relate to different people differently, and it should be natural for us, for instance, if we meet some respectable elderly person, that we'll have some feeling of respect. We naturally feel respect toward them. It's a natural feeling. Even if Mayavad Sannyasi, if he's saintly by behavior and or some Mayavadi pundit, elderly, we naturally feel some feeling of respect for him. What to speak of a Vaishnava sannyasi, elderly sannyasi. Naturally, some respectful feeling is there. Similarly, if we see little children wandering around, ready to make trouble at any moment, we don't think badly of them. We feel affection toward young children. Now, if he behaves like that 20 years later, then we'll think there's something very strange and wrong with him. But at the present time, everyone is charmed by the odd behavior of young children. There's natural feeling of affection towards young children, and it's not that as devotees we have to like switch that off and think, Hare Krishna, only Krishna. No, it's all Maya, everything else. Now, what about this one? Here's a tricky one. At my age, 55 years dead, when young women come, respectful toward me and well behaved, and naturally there's some kind of fatherly feeling. It's a natural thing. It's natural to respect older people. It's natural to have affection for young children. And they naturally relate in that way also. And in fact, the role of a guru, we find especially in the Ramanuja Sampradaya. Today is Ramanuja's appearance day according to our calendar. I believe it's not according to their calendar. But we find that always in Ramanuja Sampradaya, the guru is seen as a father. Even when Ramanuja, he was wanting to take initiation from Yamuna Acharya, but Yamuna passed away before that could happen. And then Ramanuja asked Varadaraj. Was it Varadaraj? Where was he at that time? No, he was further north at that time. Anyway, the deity, and who should be his guru? And the deity replied that you should take initiation from Mahapurna and treat him as your spiritual father. So that's always the... And in fact, there was some incident, I can't know if I can remember it all, something like this, that I've taken initiation from Mahapurna, although Mahapurna was from a Shudra family, Ramanuja from a Brahmin family, and then Mahapurna's daughter-in-law, one time she wanted to go bathing, and there was no one to go with, so she asked her mother-in-law to come. The mother-in-law scolded her, saying that, you know, who do you think I am? You couldn't bring any servants from your father's house. No, this is Mahapurna's daughter. She was in her father-in-law's house. So he said, you couldn't bring any servants from your father's house because Mahapurna was poor, didn't have servants to send. So then the daughter of Mahapurna complained to Mahapurna, this is going on. And Mahapurna said, you see Ramanuja. So Ramanuja, he heard this and he sent one of his disciples, male disciple, Brahmin disciple, name of Dasarathi, to serve. So he went to that house and started doing all the menial services. And then the people of the house were horrified that we are Shudras and a Brahmin is coming and serving here. We're going to go to hell for this offense. And so they asked him, they said, well, why are you doing this? I said, nothing for me to question. I was told to do. So then they went to ask Mahapurna, and then he sent them to Ramanuja, and he said, yeah, well, we're all part of our father's family, so we sent someone. You wanted some servant, so we sent some servant. So anyway, that's just to show how the guru is seen as a father. It's a very similar relationship in many ways, because just like the father oversees the children, raises them and guides them. So the guru is supposed to raise and guide the disciples, teach them what is right and what is wrong, and set an example for them. In the case of young women disciples, just as in the case of the deer with Bharat Maharaj, that what starts off as innocent and well-intentioned can go wrong. There is a well-known verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, also in Manu, that Srila Prabhupada often quoted, Matra swasra duhitrava naviviktasano bhavit. Balavan indriya gramo vidvangshangs apikarshati. Which means that one should not sit close to one's mother, sister, or daughter because the senses are so strong that they can attract or agitate the minds even of a learned person. Now, you might think, well, how can you be attracted to your mother? Just sexually attracted to your mother? It just seems like impossible. Although in the modern degraded age, there seem to be quite a few examples of men having incestual relations with their sisters, or more commonly daughters. It's not nice to say, but it is mentioned in Shastra, and therefore we're discussing such points. So such attraction is not impossible. So we are warned in Shastra not to be careful. Now, there are several cases of, in the modern age, Kali Yuga is a bad age, even prior to that. But especially in Kali Yuga, there are examples of gurus who have fallen down in association with female disciples. And there are cases of sexual child abuse. I venture a suggestion that although such fall downs are not at all to be condoned, they, in some cases, it may have started off innocently. It's not that in every case, devotees, non-devotees, there are non-devotees also who have taken the role of guru and eventually misused that role in relation to some of their female disciples. So it may be that started off innocently, but later, due to attraction, that very strong attraction of Maya, which Maya presents, someone who was on an elevated spiritual platform, just like Bharat, it's very clear here from Bharat Maharaj that he was on an elevated spiritual platform, but he fell down. His fall down was not gross in the sense that, it wasn't a sexual fall down, but he fell down in as much as he gave up his spiritual practices and became And his mind, instead of being fixed on Vishnu, became fixed on the deer. So he fell down. So what are we to learn from this? Well, natural affection is there. And it's not that that should be turned off or neglected or rejected. But there is also the term maryada, which means limits. Know what the limit. This term maryada is sometimes translated as etiquette, or which means proper behavior. But it literally means a limit. So one should know the limit. As Srila Prabhupada did with his family. I mean, he, after taking sannyas, he made arrangement through his sons for his ex-wife to be cared for. And he made some arrangement for his family members, but he put limitations on it also. When allotting a certain amount of money to his family members, he said, he made it very clear, there's the limit, no more. He didn't want like the resources of ISKCON to... Actually, one of his sons claimed that after Prabhupada left. He made a court case in which he claimed that all of ISKCON's properties belong to me because I'm his son. And you would have thought it was a ridiculous case, but it wasn't such an easy one to overturn. They had to prove that Prabhupada took... this son of Prabhupada's, he denied that Prabhupada had taken sannyas. And therefore, they had to prove that Prabhupada had taken sannyas. It's a ridiculous thing, but anyhow, it went on. In this book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, I record Rasaraj Prabhu, who's one of the devotees interviewed there. I've recorded there how he recalled that Rasaraj's sister used to, in Rasaraj's childhood, he remembered how Rasaraj's sister would daily bring coffee upstairs to Rasaraj's father. And then one day Rasaraj's father said to his daughter, "How old are you?" She said, 14. He said, "All right, from now on, you tell your mother to bring me coffee every day. You don't bring any more." His own daughter from a respectable IR family, Brahmin family, in which it was unthinkable that any such wrong could happen, but still, now you don't bring any more. That is called maryada. That it's even nothing can be thought is another important thing. Even nothing may be thought could be wrong, but one thing is, even if nothing goes wrong, someone can criticize. That's also there. So even from that point of view, one should be careful. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, in the early days of the movement, his secretary and servant were husband and wife team, Gaurasundar and Govinda Dasi. And Govinda Dasi, she was doing the servant work, so she would be in and out of Prabhupada's room all the time. A lot of times she'd be alone with Prabhupada. Later, when the movement grew, and Prabhupada was traveling around the world and going to India, then he didn't have any woman servants. Not like that. I mean, Palika, as they used to call her, she would cook for Prabhupada, but he kept himself surrounded by men. Even when Srila Prabhupada's sister came to see Srila Prabhupada, she was Prabhupada was about 80 and she was about 70 years old. And they're both clearly pure devotees of Krishna. But when she came to see Prabhupada, Prabhupada told his servant, Shruti Kirti, you should be with me also. Don't leave me alone. Why is that? You think, is there any question of any attraction between, mundane attraction between Prabhupada and his sister? Of course not. But just to show the example like that. Why? Why this instruction? Don't sit close to your mother, sister or daughter, because one should never trust the mind. This is later, Bharat Maharaj, after taking the body of a deer, becomes born, again given the name Bharat, this time is known as Jara Bharat. Jara means dull, apparently dull-headed. So he gave instructions to Rahugana Maharaj, a major part of which was, do not trust the mind. One should direct one's affection toward Krishna. And affection, which is natural between gurus and disciples or between human beings in this world, even between humans and animals, or affection is a natural principle because the natural state of existence is one of affection for Krishna. So it's natural to be affectionate toward others. And the bad feeling toward others may also seem to be natural in this world, but that is simply a perverted reflection of our, or a perverse, perverse manifestation of our natural love for Krishna and for all living beings. So, whatever affection we have for others, we should direct that toward Krishna. And particularly in the role of a guru, that is the duty to not to himself. Although naturally, disciples will be affectionate toward him. He will be affectionate toward disciples. But that his duty is to direct that affection toward Krishna. So we should be careful. We are in Krishna consciousness. Bhakti means to cultivate loving feelings, natural affection. But we should know that any relationship, if it's even slightly materially tinged, if we're not careful, it can turn into something mundane, which can be the cause of our fall down. So therefore we don't cultivate relationships with others. We don't maintain, devotee is enjoined not to keep close relationships with others unless we can direct that toward Krishna. Of course, sometimes it may be very difficult not to maintain certain relationships, just like with family members. So, and they may not be interested in Krishna consciousness, and you can't just cut it out. So then one has to be patient and try to gradually bring them into Krishna consciousness. But the general principle is that we should keep association with devotees. We should encourage loving feelings between devotees. Not that we're just like some kind of military camp in which we all just salute and do our duty and nurture in our hearts hatred for everyone. Dveshta sarva bhutanam, instead of advaishta, instead of non-hatred, but hatred toward all others. So affection is there. But at the same time, we should be very careful by following the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga and being very careful that we don't allow relationships to deteriorate into simply something mundane. So how can we protect against that? Well, one way is that our relationships are not just simply on looking at each other and smiling at each other and saying, how are you? Are you healthy? And all this kind of thing. But actually serving Krishna together. That will make relationships between devotees very strong. Which is one reason why I don't talk much about relationships. It's been a big subject in our movement for the last, 15 or 20 years. I have seminars on relationships and a lot of talk about relationships, but to me it seems rather strange. I mean, it's just like in a family. Maybe they do nowadays, but in a family you don't have like talk about relationships. Maybe they do in the modern age because it's so weird, the modern age. But just the fact that you're together and you're doing things together, and then automatically helping each other, automatically some relationship comes. Nowadays, the parents, they're busy with what they're doing, and the kids are busy with doing something else. The parents and kids don't see each other much, so then the father wants to, he takes his kid out to some baseball game or something, so they can have some time together. But they're really in their own world. The parents are in one world, and the kids are in their virtual world. They have their friends all over the world with all kinds of weird names that they give themselves. They don't reveal their real name. But in traditional societies, people would do things together in the family. It's like cutting firewood. And the father and the son would go to cut firewood together. It's an economic or domestic necessity to do so. So they'd do it together, and the father would show the boy how to do it, and at some point he'd let him do it, now you do it, and give him responsibility to do it, and feed the animals, just like Krishna. He was, first of all, taking out the calves, then later he could take out the big cows, little boy with big cows. So in this way, naturally the family members are together, because they have to. They do things together because they need to do so. So there's the father is like a guru. The mother is naturally a guru. He's showing you do this, don't do that. And by her own behavior, she shows the children how to respect the husband. Privately, she may tell him so many things, but in front of the children, she'll always be very respectful to the husband. So in this way, our relationships are naturally developed. So also within our movement, if we're doing things to serve Krishna together, struggling to push forward the Krishna consciousness movement, then naturally bonds between devotees become very strong. So on that basis, we should develop affection, not on any mundane basis. And with certain limits also, just like sannyasis don't keep women secretaries, for instance. They may have some service, but some distance. There should be some limit like that. So, Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Yeah.
Bharata's act of showing compassion to the deer.
Bharata's act of showing compassion to the deer seems to be wrong. No, well, that I already said. It's not wrong. But he took it too far. I closed the book, and I have to open it again. This purport, we can just see what Srila Prabhupada says about this. Prabhupada writes in the beginning of the first sentence of the purport to the text which I read, "The laws of nature work in subtle ways unknown to us." That's what happened to Bharat. He couldn't have imagined when he saw that deer floating down. It must have been a spontaneous activity to lift the deer out of the water. Didn't have time to think about it. If he wanted to sit down and think about it for 2 or 3 days, it would have been too late. The deer was going to drown, or at least would have been washed down the river. So he had to decide to act. Now then, you could say it seemed like he was almost trapped. Because then the deer was saved. Who will feed the deer? Who will protect the deer? So he himself became the father and mother, or more like the mother to the deer. In this way he was trapped. So Maya acts in subtle ways. The tendency to protect the helpless, laudable as it is, can entangle us in Maya. So it might seem heartless if Bharat was to abandon that deer. I just said devotees are not stone-hearted. But they're not compassionate towards people's material situation to the extent that they lose their Krishna consciousness. Actually, that verse, or not verse, but I read, that I read Bharat's reasoning to himself. I'll read that again with the purport. Just addresses this question. It's relevant in this regard. Translation, text 10 of this chapter. Even though this is Bharat speaking to himself, even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although they may be very important, to protect one who has surrendered. Purport, Maya is very strong. There you are. You're learning verses. You can learn these four words. Maya is very strong. In the name of philanthropy, altruism, and communism, people are feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world. Now, this is interesting because you could kind of understand, it's understandable to many people if Srila Prabhupada is attacking demoniac politicians who make wars to increase the already excessive profits of demoniac businessmen. So it's understandable that Prabhupada criticizes such people. Many people will also appreciate if Prabhupada is, as he does, he lambasts opening slaughterhouses and abortion clinics. But what about here Prabhupada is criticizing philanthropy and altruism? Do you all know what that means? Philanthropy? Philanthropy means giving money and similar things to needy people, or opening hospitals for the needy, using one's wealth for the benefit of less privileged persons. And altruism is similar. It means doing good for others. Philanthropy, you could say, is a part of altruism. So, Srila Prabhupada writes, philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve people's material conditions. Well, that's a highly controversial statement among people who don't believe in the laws of nature beyond those that they can measure. Material conditions are already established by the superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. Material comforts cannot be increased or decreased. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam, talabhyate dukhavad anyata sukham. As far as material happiness is concerned, that comes without effort, just as tribulations come without effort. Unquote. Material happiness and pain can be attained without endeavor. One should not bother for material activities. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good to others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. In this way, everyone advances spiritually by the grace of the Lord. For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way. We should be very careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. One should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. Generally, people do not know this, or they forget it. Interesting. Just like Bharat Maharaj knew it, but he forgot it. So Prabhupada is warning us that we can know that one's actual self-interest is in attaining Vishnu. We can forget it if we become misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. Prabhupada continues, consequently, they sacrifice their original interest, the attainment of Vishnu's favor, and engage in philanthropic activities for bodily comfort. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Why women sannyasis? What's the rest of the question? They're restricted. Not restricted. There's no such thing as women sannyasis. It's not restricted. It's just not allowed. Well, different roles come with different roles and different mentalities, and therefore different duties come with different bodies. I'm not going to answer that fully now because I have done in great detail. There's one seminar I gave called Women Masters or Mothers, which is available on the internet, for a detailed answer to your question. Please listen to that. Hare Krishna. Srimad